This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much, Ken. Two very good pieces to kick us off with. We open the floor now for questions and comments. If I can just repeat the guidance that I gave you. Can you wait till you receive a microphone, please? Can you state who you are and which organisation you're from? And I'll take a batch of questions before we put them back to Caroline and Ken. Okay, who's going to kick us off? Okay, we've got one just there. Thanks, Robin.
Good morning. Rob McPherson, Director of Screen Academy Scotland and Professor of Screen Media at Edinburgh Napier University. It's a question probably more for Ken, but maybe for Caroline as well, and it's maybe a slightly provocative one, but across the creative and cultural industries, there are areas of success and areas where clearly, you know, more could be done. And it could be said that in the construction of Creative Scotland and the construction of reference groups to advise on the development of those areas, it maybe isn't always the case that the practitioners know what the solution to the problem is. Mm-hmm. You don't always necessarily ask the patient what the treatment should be. Yeah. And there has been some discussion, some reference in the development of Creative Scotland to, for example, evidence-based policy. So I'd like to ask what can be done to ensure that that... And you set the test of success, Ken, for the Creative Industries Partnership. Success will be when the needs and opportunities of the creative industries, or words to that effect, are properly understood. How do we make sure that we do properly understand them? What, for example, is the role of, if you like, research and investigation of the evidence base for policy in determining and informing those discussions? Because practitioners are absolutely central, of course, to creative and cultural industries, but the practitioners don't actually always know what it is that might make the environment better for them. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't.
Thank you very much. Okay, take a couple more. Hand in the air. Got one over here and one just there. Take that one first, please, and I'll take you as well in this batch. Thank you.
Susan Garnsworthy, Director of Dumfries and Galloway Arts Association. I'm here with my colleague Rebecca Coggins from Dumfries and Galloway Council, and we're working together on a creative hub project in Dumfries at the moment with the innovation money from Creative Scotland. It's very encouraging to be here and hear what you're saying, because sometimes we think we live in a vacuum down in the southwest, and we are trying to fight the cause for the creative industries, and we don't hear very much of this. But we still feel that the solutions are going to be very complex, and especially against a background of public sector cuts. You know, we still feel like lone voices where we are singing this song, and you know, we're looking forward to perhaps some strategic and advocatory support from Creative Scotland. On the other hand, you're going to have lots of other big things to do. So I'm just wondering if you have any words of encouragement for us, because we think the cuts in the public sector and, you know, Scottish Enterprise, well, it's off the radar. They don't even know where Dumfries is, I suspect, you know. I mean, sorry, that's a bit cutting, but that's been our experience working at the coalface of the creative industries down in the southwest of Scotland. So I just wonder what your response might be.
Okay, thank you very much, Susan. And our third one in this round, just get a microphone over to you. Can I wait for you for the next batch?
Hello, I'll try to make this short, but my name is Mary Spaeth, and I'm a PhD researcher here at the University of West of Scotland. I'm also a lecturer at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm, and my research has a lot to do with the social construction, we would say in sociological terms, of the identity, and in this case of architects. So I noticed very specifically that in Caroline's slides there wasn't any mention in the section of architects, and they kind of flowed out, and I think Ken's was, and you're nodding your head was, so maybe it went under one of those headings. I saw it in Ken's, but it's interesting because they get thrown around and people assume because of architects' own fault sometimes, and what we would call kind of a discourse that's gone back for 150 to 200 years of a very kind of powerful seeming industry. And these, you know, people, mostly men in Scotland actually, who, you know, the women are coming out in 50-50 in the universities, but they disappear for many of the reasons you describe, and men are disappearing as well. Because the reality is most of them are self-employed and they aren't all with the, you know, RMJM firms. Mm. And so they kind of fall through the gap, and I think it's an interesting phenomenon as what to do and with some of these sectors, because what architecture reflects is a kind of issue around career. You were talking about how to train up skills, and that on one hand the creative industries doesn't need specialists, and yet the discourse between higher education and academia is that we have to create specialists for career that increase prestige and professionalization and money and all of those things that are a bit contradictory to the spirit of creative culture and the kinds of people who go into that. And there's a conflict in these kinds of cultures, I think, that are maybe creating some of the problems that we want to talk about today. So it's a bit of a question for you both to ask, where do architects fit in this as well? Because I'd be interested in knowing what you think about that in the discussions of...
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much. We'll just kick off with those first three, some quite wide-ranging comments and observations there. We've got questions around the role of evidence-based policymaking. The comment was that practitioners are perhaps not always the best people to identify what the solutions are to the challenges they face. So what role for evidence-based policymaking? Second observation around the reality check of where the public sector finance settlement finds itself at the moment, and the plea from the Southwest, which is, you know, particularly where peripheral parts of Scotland, what some people might feel as peripheral parts of Scotland, if you're out with the Central Belt, how can you get a proper piece of the action? What role might there be for the partners who are involved in the Creative Industries Partnership? And then our third observation, looking at a particular role of architecture as one of the industries that's in there, but perhaps if we can apply that more generally, and if you have comments on those range of industries that are contained within creative and cultural industries. Caroline, any responses from you in the first instance?
Sure. When it comes to architecture, it's simply a technical issue. Unfortunately, we don't represent architects, and I would love to have them and a few other people, but I won't mention it because Alistair's used to me saying the things I'd like to have. But architects would like to have. But they would need to vote with their feet and say they wanted to move from the Sector Skills Council that covers them, which is construction skills, and as a unit, march over to us and say, we want to be with designers, thank you. And they haven't done that. And I don't think we're really allowed to go and poach them. So that's the technical issue there. I think you're saying there is a sort of conflict between having to be a generalist or also having to be a specialist in education, looking at specialist needs. I think our research manager was saying yesterday when I was talking to him about it, that the major change is they're now looking for a core specialist ability and then asking that person to take on more other roles. So that is the nature of the conflict. Yeah.
And I've got lots of questions to answer, yes. And I'll deal with the architecture one quickly. On that architecture will be part of the design services reference group, which also includes advertising and digital design. So in terms of looking at the identified needs and barriers to growth from architects in Scotland, then that will be part of that discussion. So hopefully that allays some of your concerns. In terms of Robin's question, thank you, Robin, I knew you'd ask a good one. Yes, is the short answer. Research is absolutely critically important, and it's not that practitioners don't know, it's just that they don't necessarily have all the evidence themselves to inform their broader perspective. And part of our responsibility is to ensure that that research is there. Mm-hmm. And one of the very good things that's come out already from the Creative Industries Partnership is that all the public sector partners are committed to working together and looking at the research needs in a joined-up way, again, rather than historically, which was always in quite a fragmented way. Mm-hmm. And Barbara's here from University of St Andrews, and so Scottish Green's already got a knowledge transfer partnership looking at the impact of digital on business models within the screen sector, and we're looking at the potential of commissioning other bits of research within that area. But one of the basic bits of research we need to do, and this goes back to the whole debate around creative industries over the last 2 or 3 years, is actually understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. There's an awful lot of folk involved in the support system, whether it's at local authority level, national level, enterprise agencies, a whole raft. Who's out there? What are they doing? What's the both the counting the numbers side, but what's the qualitative feedback as well? And again, that can be tested out through reference groups. It can be tested out in a whole range of other ways as well. But that's one of the key things that we've committed to doing. My nervousness, and again, would be agreeing with you, is that we end up with a policy-based evidence gathering, which is the big danger that a lot of governments and public bodies get into. So it's trying to ensure that we absolutely stick with the evidence that evidence-based policy, but are quite sensible and pragmatic that it has to cover quite a broad area. Second one, in terms of Dumfries, I'm going to quote, and this sort of opening it out to a much broader level, quotes Professor Michael Higgins, who's leading light in transforming Ireland's relationship with culture, including setting up the Irish Film Board many years ago. And I was at a seminar with him a few weeks ago, and he said, never waste a good recession. That we're all going to be faced with a quite scary public spending environment over the next few years. And at the moment, I'm sure everyone who's working in the public sector is looking at it going, right, well, how can we trim this and trim that and try and make sure that we keep enough stuff going? We're going to be faced with much more fundamental issues and challenges, and they are real challenges in every sense, over the coming years. And we're going to have to decide what is more important than something else. And I think that is a really good thing, because for culture and creativity and arts and film and all the things that we hold dear, it means that we stop fretting about whether we're spending 50 million or 60 million. It becomes, how do we genuinely position that at the heart of a much broader policy debate? We've failed to do that up until now. Occasionally it surfaces. Our collective challenge is positioning it in a different landscape, a different policy landscape. If all we're doing is going, well, how does individual culture departments and local authorities, or how does the government's culture bit spend a reducing amount of money, then it's going to be painful. If, however, we approach it differently, I think there's a huge opportunity. And going back to the partnership approach, well, actually, we've got partners around the table who are committed to seeing things happen. If you look at what the new Chief Executive of Creative Scotland is bringing to the table in terms of his work in the North East, where it's been culture and practitioner-led regeneration of a bit of England, which historically had a bit of a low reputation. I think I'm looking at the other Barbara, sort of dreadful reputation. And he, along with a range of others working in partnership, has lifted Newcastle Gateshead so that folk feel proud of it. Folk around the rest of the country are looking at it going, yeah, we'd actually want to go there. Doing things that historically would have been possible by linking Newcastle and Gateshead together. You know, historically, that little strip of water could have been 100 miles in terms of the difference between the two cultures. You look at Scotland and looking at our relationship across the whole country, just looking at the horrible central belt bit of Glasgow and Edinburgh, again, it might as well be 1,000 miles half the time in terms of the split between the two. How can we use culture and creativity to approach things differently? And I think that's where the complex solutions, absolutely, but we need to think differently about how we approach them. So take it on board, but I think we all collectively need to approach it differently.
Okay, thank you very much. Some good questions, some good responses there. Another round, I had one there to take. Who else would like to speak in this one as well? Get a microphone up there, please, in the first instance. And a second one in the middle of the hall there.
Hi, good morning. It's David Hughes, the Head of Music and Creative Industries at Stow College in Glasgow. And I noticed, Carolyn, in your talk there that you mentioned a statistic of 98% white within the creative industries. And if you look around the audience today, that's probably reflected here. Within education, we now have a statutory duty to be dealing with race, gender and disability. Are CC Skills concerned about that particular statistic? And if so, are there any initiatives to change that?
Thank you very much. Good question. One in the middle there. You just raise your hand so we can get the microphone to you.
Thazza Sanderson from Drake Music Scotland. We work with people with disabilities and also train musicians, including musicians with disabilities, to work with other people with disabilities, primarily in the Scottish education sector through working in SEN schools. I've got a couple of questions, really. One of them is about our difficulty in understanding IP issues and protecting intellectual property, which relates to a particular project that we're engaged in at the moment. And we've been struggling with accessing information about that sort of area and the legal aspects of that. I feel as if we've been kind of mining this little bit ourselves without very much help from elsewhere. And although we don't necessarily understand, we know that there is a need for us to gather that kind of information. And the question really is about what mechanisms there are to help a small organisation like ours to find out more about that area and to make the best use of that kind of expertise, which we know exists and obviously is available around the place, but business support really for a small music organisation. My other comment really is just more about the employment and the training issue, which came up in Caroline's presentation. I feel that we're wasting opportunities every single day in our organisation for people to become better practitioners, to access training. We've got some really, really excellent people, but when one of our really excellent musicians is out there delivering in a school without somebody else being mentored and trained by them, we're losing an opportunity for somebody to be trained. And we would genuinely like to be creating more employment for people. We've got a terribly small pool of people. We really want to build that. And the question is, how do we go about doing that? In the past, we've paid people. We've had grants and paid people in the sector to come in and work with us. But I just feel it's an opportunity that's being lost.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll take one more just now as well. Is there a third? Yes, thank you very much. Thank you. Gentleman just there.
My name is Ike Kebon. I work with the City of Edinburgh Council Economic Development. I've been working with people or businesses in this sector, and actually my concern have been in the last 1 year have been Most of the small businesses are public sector funded businesses or endeavors. What is the role of the private sector here, and what actions are we taking actually to bring in the private sector to lead this sector, which actually have been practiced in most European cities?
Thank you. Good questions. Okay, thank you very much. Over to you, Caroline and Ken. We had questions there around, you know, the equalities issue. The slides that Caroline put up there reinforce the impression that the creative and cultural industries in Scotland is horribly white, I think was the phrase that was used at another time. Are there specific interventions that are special initiatives that are taking place to address that? Questions on access to specialist advice around intellectual property, what services are available for small cultural and creative economy organisations in Scotland, what help is there? And another observation about, you know, creating employment opportunities. What are your comments there about lost opportunities that perhaps were previously funded through public sector grants? And I suppose linking all of that, what's the role of the private sector? Not a lot of private sector delegates here today. Very much public sector, academia lead on this. What is the role of private sector in stimulating creative and cultural industries in Scotland? Good questions.
Okay. David, your diversity question. The 98% white is an average across the piece. I think you might have seen from the bar graphs that Visual Arts is actually leading in that area and have a much healthier percentage, quite healthy in fact. But yes, we are concerned. With regard to initiatives, obviously we want everything we do to be open and accessible to every possible grouping of people. But a specific intervention we thought was a creative apprenticeship scheme where you can earn whilst you learn, because the major barrier to an awful lot of people is being able to support yourself. Well, if our industries are going to offer work placements and voluntary work and unpaid work and unpaid internships, you're locking a lot of people out who just simply can't afford to take that opportunity. And I think that does lock out a lot of people across all groupings. So we are interested in that. We're also looking at raising the diversity index up, which is an argument that we're trying to build around the economic case for increasing the diversity and mix in your business. And we have a board member called Daniel Taylor, who is a designer, Metro Design, and he has a great lead in this in terms of expanding his design business and advertising business based on, if we have a multicultural Britain, how do we reflect that back and sell back to that multicultural Britain? And so he hires people from all different ethnic backgrounds. And I think we need to follow his example and we need to use him as a case study. But he's working with us on the Diversity Index. Coming to the intellectual property issue, IP issues, you can find out about the legal aspects from the Musicians' Union, but you can also find out from Intellectual Assets Scotland, which is a free service which helps you to capitalise on intellectual property and gives you advice. And the Culture Enterprise Office will also have advice specifically on IP rights, although it wouldn't be a lawyer you'd be seeing. From time to time, I sponsor events with a lawyer specifically on the music industry, and I'm about to do so again at a two-day showcase in April. So maybe that's an opportunity we can talk about in the break. And coming on to your other issue about developing your training, I'm not entirely sure if I was grasping what you were saying. Are you saying that a person that would be in the building available to train is actually out training in schools and you're missing that capacity?
It's more that we have a constant flow of people coming to us looking for training opportunities which we're just not able to support. And it's really about, you know, how we build our capacity.
Yes. I'm wondering if there's a way that you can share with other organisations and somehow have a mentoring and exchange scheme that may be possible. But I'm not really getting to grips with your with the issue and what the answer could be. It's incredibly difficult to do what you want to do and make the most of your talent and develop it. And the role of the private sector, well, as far as the Sector Skills Council is concerned, the role of the private sector is to inform us on what they need in terms of skills, and it's not really that we would stand up and encourage necessarily the private sector to get involved in our normal day-to-day work, although I did suggest today that they support microfinance and underwrite business loans and start to get involved and look at also the role of private finance and private sector in creating commercial hubs or even incubation and investment. It's, as I say, the Sector Skills Council, that's a sort of a grey line for us. And maybe Ken could elucidate more from your point of view.
Yep, I won't look at the other ones that Caroline's answered those, but in terms of the private sector, absolutely critical in developing the broader creative sector. If we look at the big figures, there are 5 billion turnover, 60,000 employed. They are not all paid for through the public sector. So obviously somebody somewhere has got very good relationship with the private sector, with very good relationship with markets. I think critically good relationship with markets across the world. That if we look at what's going on at a local level, the companies that are succeeding are the ones that are looking internationally, the ones that are making relationships and networks with partner financiers, partner companies at an international level, and looking at where those opportunities are. And one of the, again, one of the challenges for the sector is how to seize that. With the impact of digital technology over the last dozen years, when I started out in this game 20 plus years ago, it was quite exciting. I had an electric typewriter, and you know, you could spend half a day typing up a letter, whereas now it's, you know, 100 emails a day coming in and out, and you're trying to manage that. If you look at it from the production end, you no longer have to worry about where you're located. You can be based in Dumfries, and you can connect very easily to someone based in Houston or wherever else and do trade that way. For the public sector, is the key role, I think, is there to encourage and enable, and not to get in the way. Equally, there are bits of the public sector that Scotland and the Creative Industries Partnership in Scotland doesn't have responsibility for. So, for example, within broadcasting, Ofcom continue to have the regulatory responsibility there. The BBC, as a UK institution, continue to effectively set policy and strategy that impacts across the UK and therefore in Scotland. And part of our job is how we can influence them to ensure Scotland gets a better deal. Now, there are other bits of the public sector, but they set the framework that the private sector operate within. a very quick example of that, where PACT were very successful 7 years ago in the Communications Act, was they ensured that in the depths of the Communication Act that the secondary exploitation rights for TV production in the UK would transfer to the independent production companies rather than being retained by the broadcasters. And that simple shift of policy has enabled a complete transformation of the independent production sector in the UK and leading to major companies, several of them run by Scots, although they're based in London, like Shed Media and a number of All Three Media, to have turnover. Shed Media turnover 100 million, All Three Media turnover 300 million. They are big, commercial, successful companies. How can we get more of that in Scotland?
Yeah.
Okay. Final opportunity for questions with our panellists here just now. Got one just there. Can you raise your hands for me if there's anybody else? This, as I said, it's the last opportunity for these two.
Hello, my name's Wendy Law, and I do the kind of mixed portfolio of work. So I'm self-employed visual arts consultant. I'm ex-Scottish Arts Council. I also work for Edinburgh Napier University and School of Arts and Creative Industries. I wonder how much ground has been lost by public sector policy not articulating strongly enough what the creative industries is. What I see with my self-employed hat on are small businesses going out of business at a rate of knots with a recession, particularly in design. And I also see, dare I say it, a naivety actually in terms of public sector when it actually interfaces with private sector. And it's something I've written about for Arts Professional, in that I think artists, there's a whole layer of kind of brokering and expert advice, and I know the CEO does a great deal on this, but actually in helping artists, especially if they're working in an individual capacity, and some art forms are more prone to that, like the visual arts, in reaching a business context and being even having the first kind of conversation with private sector, it's incredibly difficult, and there seem to be big gaps. And I actually wonder if the public sector could also do with some training within the kind of realm of what private business is about. I just put those questions out there.
Okay. Any other ones finally? Okay, thank you.
Anne Gifford, University of the West of Scotland. Just maybe picking up on the last question, this idea of creative hubs that's been talked about. What role can the public sector, in particular universities, FE, colleges, play in actually being part of a creative hub? Just thinking about some of the issues that the speakers have raised this morning.
Okay, final opportunity, last one. Nope, well, I'll leave it with those two then. If you just want to respond to those. Questions around, again, what the public sector can do for individual private sector. Is there a disconnect in terms of the sort of specialist needs? Is there a training need? I think was part of the question there, identified what the public sector should be delivering. And that question on creative hubs, which was mentioned, what role do you see for further and higher education in the provision of area-based specialist hubs?
What do you want to kick off on?
I'll kick off on the the naivety point.
I'll do the hubs.
I think you can be right. I mean, I think there's inevitably folk working in the public sector who don't have the full knowledge and experience and expertise that it would be useful to have. Equally, there are folk in the private sector who don't have the full knowledge, experience and expertise. Would it be a good idea if perhaps the two sides talked more often and tried to break down some of those barriers? Yes. And so not the reference group is the panacea, but there is an opportunity within that environment. There's opportunities within other networking events and elsewhere. Something like today has the potential to start that conversation. Is there a need for a greater level of skills? Yes. What have we lost with delays? Well, it's not just Scotland, it's not just the UK that have been grappling with this issue about the cultural and creative industries. It is the rest of the world. And actually the rest of the world is looking at Scotland taking the lead. If you're screwing your face up, but the reality is, if you look at Ireland, if you look at Canada, if you look at most of the states, if you look at Australia, the rest of Europe, they're all going, where does this sit? How do these two things work together? And just yesterday in the Irish Times, and I've been waiting for my moment to quote from this, and Robin actually vlogged it last night, a bit about Grain Miller arguing that basically what we're doing in Scotland is innovative, radical. It's bringing all the bits together. At long last, it's joining the government and public agency dots that historically have been hugely disparate. If you look at the government structures that we are tapping into, historically we were purely part of the culture division. By trying to have a conversation with the enterprise division, where Scottish Enterprise and Hiles Isles Enterprise is based, it was very difficult because you were dealing with two different departments. By bringing in local authorities, it's a different department. By bringing in the funding council, it's yet another department. It's a bit messy. And what the partnership is able to do is bring all those bits together. The Irish are saying, look to Scotland for taking the lead. Yes, it's taken a wee while to get here, but where we're at is still way ahead of a number of others. And again, looking at what's happening at the UK level with the BFI, with the Film Council, relationship with the constant redrawing of the Arts Council map and their approach to doing business, Arts Council England, this is, I think we've got it right, I think, in terms of putting the pieces together. The true success, though, will be in 5-10 years' time, and we'll to measure it at that point. But I think, have we lost things with delays? Possibly, but we're still further ahead than most others.
So, coming to the Creative Hub question, FEHE involved in a Creative Hub would be fantastic. I think there's an example with Adam Smith College in Fife, where they have the Priory in just off Beinecke area, and the Priory used to be where I did my computing studies and COBOL programming way back in the day. It's a long time ago. It's a lovely space, and they've converted to 23 units for creative hubs, a creative hub. And so that they've actually given land and space and reapportioned it to that use. And what I think FEHE can do beyond that, apart from unused space and unused buildings and classrooms, and is your talent. There's an awful lot of FEHE talent in terms of CPD that could be offered in the hub, actually go there and they could get that on-the-job coaching that they're looking for, that professional development they're looking for. You could invent CPD programmes specifically for that local hub. And and you've got part-time lecturers that are part-time industry, and they could mentor through the process so they can grow and thrive, and they can learn from others who have gone before. So I actually think there's a role there to play. And also, quoting Adam Smith again, but there are other examples, they're levering the response with the local authority. So by them saying, we are willing, the local authority is saying, OK, we will build. So they're talking about 12 industrial units across Fife for creative hubs. And so that's the kind of power it has as well. And so you can actually start to bring the private sector and the local authority and a talent retention programme and incubation and commercial hub and training together if the college and university is involved. So I'm quite excited about the potential for it, if I can just get some of them off the ground.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm afraid I'm going to have to draw a close there. I think we've had a really good start for the day, setting the scene. Can I ask you to thank our two panellists in the traditional fashion, Ken Hay, Caroline Parkinson. Thank you very much. Okay, we have a 20-minute comfort break now. Coffee will be served back in near where the registration area is. And if you can please take your seats so we can convene again at 11:40. Thank you very much indeed.